This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
I love this. Not every day that you get involved to be part of someone's journey to start a family, especially when it's happening live on stage. Well, UK performer, writer and comedian Krishna Ister is bringing First Trimester to the Melbourne Fringe this October. It's a show that's part hilarious, part heartfelt and 100% real. And they're meeting as many potential sperm donors as possible right there in front of an audience. And Melbourne is the next stop on their world search. Krishna, welcome to Drive.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
This is such an exciting story and also such a personal thing to share with strangers. Why take this journey onto the stage?
Yeah, well, there were a couple of reasons. The main reason is because I'm a performance maker and my first instinct is to solve life problems by using performance. And it all really started because me and my partner were both trans and we were looking on sperm donor websites and realized that most of the information we could get from these databases were things like height and eye color and in the UK specifically, whether or not if you had PhDs or not. And these were things that we really didn't care about. So as a joke, I was like, oh, it'd be great if we could speak to all these people and work out who they really are, because in one way or another, they're going to be in our lives forever, because in most places, even if you go through like a sperm bank, an anonymous sperm donor, the child still has access to their information at 18. So it was sort of from that comment where the show came about, because I was like, I've got access to lots of people through performance because that's the thing I do. But then the other reason was because when we were looking online about how trans people might go about doing this, there wasn't a lot of information out there. So it sort of became a big part of, I guess, the reason for wanting to do it was to also gather information for other people who were looking to go through a similar process.
It's a bit
of family making.
It's almost like, and I don't want to sort of belittle it, but it's like a job interview, isn't it? You don't, until you meet the person, you don't know what you're getting. I sort of, as you were talking, I was thinking, if I was going through this process, I'd want to talk to them as well and find out what they're like. What sort of characteristics is my child going to inherit? I love the idea, rather than necessarily receiving a PhD in some discipline. It sounds much more, I don't know, human. Do you reckon?
Yeah, I think so. And also, I think we don't necessarily think that, like, most things are genetic and they pass on. So I think we're less looking for characteristics the child will definitely have, and more we're looking for a friend that we can have in our lives forever after this point. So we jokingly say it's a bit like a first date, but live on stage, because it feels like sort of really intimate and we're really getting to know each other. But at the same time, we're sort of like trying to find that spark for a friend that we might want to have forever.
Now, when Melbourne audiences walk into First Trimester, what do you hope they'll, because I imagine when they walk in straight away, it'll be, what do we expect? What's going to happen? Tell us what happens.
Well, actually, you sort of just sit there. So there's no audience participation unless you've signed up to be interviewed live on stage. But it's a durational piece of work, so you can come and go from the space as you like. Some shows are 3 hours, some shows are 9 hours. And I just sit there and speak to a different person every 10 minutes. We, I guess, have made it to sort of feel like you're binge-watching some sort of documentary Netflix series. Because they're sort of short and they've got a very specific format, and it's also a live TV set on stage, because we're also archiving every interview to turn into some form of documentary resource at the end of this process.
Now, you've been searching in other cities. We've got London, Dublin, Copenhagen and Auckland. How have those cities surprised you in terms of the people who've stepped forward?
I mean, it's different in each place, which I really love. And I've learned completely different things from different places. Like, for example, when we did it in Switzerland, there was recurring theme of a lot of people raising kids communally, not just queer people, even straight people, which I was really taken aback by. They had like this communal idea of family making and raising. Whereas in Dublin, everyone loved their grandmums. So it really depends. It surprised me in different ways. But also because they don't necessarily watch the interviews before or after them. Sometimes it's an amazing way to learn about a city while also learning about people, if that makes sense. Like in Dublin, every single person, one after the other, mentioned their grandmums, which no one had done in any other city. But I think the main thing that I've learned really from every place is the kindness of people. They, like, people show up without any expectations in terms of what we might give them. And I think there's also a lot of noise in the media about how trans people are seen or how trans people are treated. And I think the most amazing thing from doing the show in different places has been to see how that's not true in real life when you're sitting across from someone.
That must be reassuring to other members of the community as well who hear that.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a general sense of hopefulness that the audience takes away from it.
Let's talk about, I suppose, 10 minutes or however long it takes on stage, this conversation with potential donors. What's the moment where you know you're really connecting with someone and you're thinking, okay, this person could be a good candidate? Is there a shortlist?
Do you mean a shortlist of people, a shortlist of characteristics? Yeah, I mean, there is a shortlist in every place that we've been to. And the way it works is usually the people that interview or get interviewed on stage with me are then told to get back in touch with us after if they might consider carrying this conversation forward. So then we sort of look at, my partner sits in the audience in every show and makes his notes and I write my notes. And then at the end of each place, we sort of look at who has said yes to us and who we thought might be a good person for us. And then everything that happens after that is behind closed doors. But we've had a bunch of conversations with people, and actually NAMM's going to be the final place we ever do the show.
Fantastic. What's it like? These people, I imagine it's quite vulnerable. They're quite vulnerable when they go up on stage. I mean, you're talking about intimate parts of a person's life, their history, and whatever other questions you ask. What's it feel like having those conversations with people?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I guess there's a system to the interviews where it doesn't necessarily start out really deep very quickly. And also some of these questions you might think are sort of light and frivolous, like one of my favorite questions is, are you a bad boy? And that sounds silly, but actually I get so much from the person answering it in terms of what sort of person they are and how, like, what their immediate response is. So some of these questions aren't like particularly putting someone on the spot, making them vulnerable just for the sake of it. But I think also because of the way the interviews are set up, both in what questions get asked and what questions lead to, but also the process of being a participant, because you've got to do a Zoom with the producer first, and you get a lot of information about, you don't know what the questions beforehand, but you get a lot of information about what happens on stage. I don't think it's as vulnerable or as scary as it sounds. But to me, I think it feels really incredible to be able to connect with so many people over that course of time, and for people to be so willing to sit in that chair and answer these questions.
Now, the project, it also is shining a light, like you mentioned earlier, on trans reproductive health care. How is that part of the experience for the audience as well?
It's in terms of the questions I ask people and I guess how they respond to it, but also some of the people I'm interviewing are people who've done it in the past. They're people who've had kids through sperm donors. They are sperm donors themselves. So I think through the conversations, I think you get it. It's more subtext than like sort of, not every interview might have conversations about it, but I guess you're thinking about it as a whole while you're sitting there watching me do this.
When you're having the conversations on stage, what role, I suppose, does humour play in terms of, you know, does it make it easier for people to open up about, I suppose, what could be an awkward topic for some?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I feel like it's definitely a way into both, like, creating a rapport with the participant, but also to allow audiences into this topic, something they might not have considered before, something they've got lived experience of, but might not have necessarily experienced in this way on stage. So I feel like, yeah, humor does a big job in making the topic accessible to a lot of people.
We hear a lot about, certain research and starting to look at, I suppose, things like trauma being handed down through generations, etc. Do you ask questions? Do you probe into, you know, how people are, how they react to certain situations? Do you try and find out that sort of information?
I guess we've got questions in terms of, like, how are you under pressure? Stuff like that, things that might give us, and those are questions that are vague and sort of more broad in purpose, because then people tend to tell us what they want to tell us in response to that question. But we do ask about, like, people's family history, not in terms of trauma or medical things, because I think that's what you can get through a sperm bank. And of course, some parts of that are important, and we might ask them future down the line when we have more conversations with that specific person, if we're going with that person. But we do ask in terms of, like, would their parents want to be grandparents? How do they see their family unit being part of our family unit? So I guess we do ask about generations above them, but maybe not in the way that you expect.
Krishna, I'm fascinated. I think this is fantastic. For those who want to participate, where do we get the information?
It is on the Melbourne Fringe website and also on the Arts House website.
Fantastic.
I think.
Just looking
at I'm pretty sure.
I've got it here. Krishna, that is such an interesting story. And I can't wait to see the documentary when you put it all together. Thanks so much for sharing it with us today.
I know. Thank you. Thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
Hopefully see you there.
Yes. First trimester. It runs from the 16th to the 18th October at Arts House North Melbourne as part of Melbourne Fringe. And if you're curious, you can go to melbournefringe.com.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.